Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Sabbath services. The Exodus from Egypt was one of the largest mass migrations in human history. There's been some bigger ones, but this one happened all at once. The journey between the Red Sea and Mount Sinai occurred during the same time period that we're in right now, between the last day of unleavened bread and the day of Pentecost. So in this time frame is when this happened. After watching the waters of the Red Sea close in over the armies of the Pharaoh, the Israelites turned and face the other direction with just the clothes on their backs, basically, following Moses into the desert and into the unknown. Let's take a look at some interesting events that occurred during their journey between the Red Sea and Mount Sinai. In Exodus 12:37, then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides children. So that was probably well over a million people. A million people en masse traveling from the Red Sea out into the desert. That's a lot of people. They walked away from the banks of the Red Sea with what they could carry and the clothes on their backs. There was no time for a quick stop at REI to get supplies, or maybe stop at Starbucks and get a quick pick-me-up before they headed out into the desert. But there was plenty of barren rock and sand. So young and old, mothers and children began their long hike into the wilderness. Now, those people were probably pretty tough. You know, the men made bricks with their hands all day, and the women worked in the fields. They'd been slaves for much of the 400 years that they were in Egypt, where they were treated extremely harshly. It's not a stretch to think, as they came out of that area, that they were suffering. Not all of them, but many of them, from what we would call PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. They were probably pretty messed up. Confused, disoriented, scared, not really knowing where they were going. So they followed Moses, and they followed that cloud, and they followed that fire, and they had the earliest beginnings of learning to trust the God of Moses. That was the very beginning, because they'd been in servitude or slavery for many, many years. Exodus 13:21 says, "And the Lord went before them by day in the pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night." So they followed. What knowledge of God had been retained in their collective memory in all this time they were in Egypt? What had they been able to retain of their history? You know, what had 400 years of pagan Egypt stripped away from their knowledge of God's way and of their own history as the people of God? What had been preserved and what had been lost and what had been verbally transmitted down through time, you know, because they didn't have books that they could read and figure out what had gone before. They had to work 7 days a week. They were slaves. It was, you know, pretty tough. So what had been lost? It's obvious and understandable that much had been lost along the way, but that was about to change. So we see God begin to provide for basic human needs. I was a little reluctant to talk about this next part, but it's a real thing, okay? There's over a million people traveling in a gigantic group. And one of the most important things, we have a saying, the backpacking community and hikers, you know, leave no trace. So one of the greatest problems that they may have faced was sanitation. Shirley and I, my wife and I, went to the feast in Stirling, Scotland, and we toured in Edinburgh one day, and while we were there, the tour guide said, see the really tall building right there? So they would collect all the, you know, waste products and just throw them out the window into the gutter, and it would go down, you know, the gutter. So, you know, it was beautiful and quaint, but when you think about that part of it, you know, the rats and all that stuff. So somewhat problematic. So you didn't want that to happen. So God did provide a way for sanitation in a law, which is interesting. It's been said the biggest improvement in history of human health was not modern medicine, but good sanitation. Just the trash truck going around, picking up your trash, a sewer system, whatever it is. So throwing your waste out the window into the street is not an example of good sanitation. So God, as I said, God provides, in fact, there's a few rules like this in the Bible. God provides the first that I can think of rule on sanitation. And that's found in Deuteronomy 23:12-13, where God said, also you shall have a place outside the camp where you may go out and can have an implement among your equipment. And when you sit down outside, you shall dig with it and turn and cover your refuse. So, you know, you think, okay, Dave, isn't that kind of weird? Well, these people needed to be healthy when they traveled. They couldn't get sick with dysentery or some other terrible disease caused by waste all over the place. Plus, God didn't want to walk around in that either. So this is important. So as they continued to walk, you know, they went out farther into the desert, and what do you think is the most important thing that you can have when you're in the desert? A hot, dusty, dry desert. What's the most important thing?
Water,
yeah. So Moses brought Israel, this is in Exodus 15:22-26. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days into the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, what shall we drink? What are they talking to Moses for? You think they start maybe pray to God? You know, this God that's had all these miracles? No. They blame Moses. So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree where he cast it into the waters, and the waters were made sweet. So there he made a statute and an ordinance where he tested them and said, if you will diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right. Give ear to the commandments and keep all the statutes. I will put none of the diseases that are in Egypt on you, for I am the Lord who heals you. It only took 3 days, and they were dying of thirst out in the desert. You know, that's about how long it takes. You literally can die without water in about 3 days. I was going to say that the bottled water from Costco was gone by this time. They didn't have any. So if you've ever been really dehydrated and really thirsty, the only thing you can see is sand and rocks, and you don't have any hope of finding water, you might cry out too. You might get a little freaked out about that. Interesting that God uses a tree here to heal the bitter water. And when their thirst is quenched, he begins teaching them that he is their healer as they obey him. Trees are for healing then and in the future. Many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with Revelation 22:1-2, where he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations." So that was the end of chapter 15 of Exodus. Right at the end of chapter 15 of Exodus, there's just a one sentence, the last verse. It's verse 27. And it says, "They came to Elim." This is kind of what prompted me to put this together here. "They came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees." So they camped there by the waters. And we probably just like read right over that. Okay, 12 wells and 70 palm trees. What does that mean? So, you know, maybe some of them, though, had heard transferred down over the centuries about how the children of Israel had ended up in Egypt in the first place, about Joseph and the famine and settling in the land of Goshen. Did anyone see the irony as they quenched their thirst at the 12 wells and rested in the shade under the 70 palm trees? Genesis 46:27, "And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were two persons, all the persons of the house of Jacob who went into Egypt were 70. So 12 tribes, 12 sons, they went into Egypt, and there were 70 palm trees. There were 70 people and 12 tribes. So it was like, maybe they thought of that. I did. Of course, I'm, reading about it 3,500 years later, but maybe they did too. So it's a reminder of where they'd come from and, what had become to them. So the next thing that happened along the way, and we've heard about manna, right? The manna that God gave. So anyway, they got out into the desert, and the water, they had water, a little water, and the unleavened bread had run out, and now they're getting hungry. So they're crying out, to Moses, "Oh, that we died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, that we may, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. For you brought us out into the desert to kill the whole assembly with hunger," they said. Well, maybe they forgot the whips. They forgot the hard labor. And here they are out in the desert. They're free now, but they can't. So anyway, God did hear them, and he provided a miraculous type of food for them. Of course, we know manna. They called it manna. So in the morning, it would appear on the ground or on plants, and they'd pick it for the first 5 days and gather what they needed. If they gathered more than they needed during that five-day period, the manna would spoil and the worms would come out. So they were only supposed to gather just what they needed. But on the sixth day, which we later call the preparation day, they would gather twice as much, and it wouldn't spoil. So they could carry it over onto the Sabbath. There wouldn't be any manna during the Sabbath. So that was God is using food, he's using water and other things like that to remind them and to teach them. And he's teaching them about the Sabbath. He's teaching them to obey him, to keep the Sabbath day. And, and it's interesting that they ate that manna up until the day that they went into the promised land. For 40 years they ate manna. And then as soon as they went into the promised land, stopped. But they all died anyway. But fortunately, we know John 6:51, which says, Jesus said, "I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I give for the life of the world." So anyway, they're continuing on. They have their manna now. But they're getting thirsty again. They ran out of water again, and they're in trouble. So the congregation, you know, was contending with Moses. How come you give us water? We don't have any water. So, you know, instead of praying, you know, and asking God, would you please, Father, please give us water? They blame Moses again. Okay, so Moses said, why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses. Why is it that you brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, what shall I do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me. So Moses said, get the elders, take your rod, you know, that you struck the water with, and I'll stand before this rock, and water will come out, and the people will drink. So another miracle. So he called the place Massah and Meribah because of the contention of the children of Israel and because they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? God knew they needed water, but, you know, they're still learning to trust God. This is the whole thing. They're learning to trust God at this time. They had lost a lot of this memory of who they were. So God is beginning to kind of gently teach them to trust, you know, trust him. So you'd think that with all those previous miracles and interventions that they'd start to get it, but if you were out in the desert and you didn't have water and you were very thirsty, all of us might get a little panicky. We might get a little panicky and lose faith and blame whoever Moses would be to us instead of crying out to God. So I guess the question is, when things like that happen to us, is the Lord among us or not? Stuff's going to happen to us like that. We're going to be in a dire strait somewhere, sometime. Is the Lord among us or not? And of course, Jesus said in John 6:35, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and who believes in me shall never thirst. So the next thing that happened was they met the Amalekites. The Amalekites. So these guys were like, it would probably be like having the Hell's Angels show up in the parking lot out here and want to fight or something like that, okay? These were bad guys, and these were like slaves. They've been slaves. They had their head down all the time, you know? They didn't want to get whipped. Don't hurt me. And so now the Amalekites want to fight. So Moses said to Joshua, this is in Exodus 17, choose some men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of my God in my hand. So Joshua went out and he started fighting. And, you know, Moses is holding up this rod. And Joshua is winning the battle. And all of a sudden, have you ever tried to hold your hands up like this for a long time? You can't do it very long. Okay, pretty soon, and he had that rod in his hand, and pretty soon it started, oh, yeah! And as soon as it started to go down, then the Amalekites would start winning. Then he'd get the rod back, okay, and then Joshua would start winning. So Aaron, his brother, and Hur got a rock and set it down under Moses. Moses sat on the rock, and they held the rod up for Moses, and they won. Okay. So there's a story there for us too, that we need to hold each other up. It's, you know, we need to help each other. And when we do, we can win. They won, and because they won, they'd never won anything for 400 years, and now they won this battle. Okay, that's gonna give you a little confidence, right? And they would need confidence, because this is the first of many battles that Joshua would fight with the children of Israel. So they did gain confidence. And finally, so Moses was married to a woman named Zipporah, and they had two sons. So before he went into Egypt to, you know, confront Pharaoh, he sent Zipporah and his two sons to live with his father-in-law. for safety purposes. And then he went in and all that, you know, all the plagues and everything and the Red Sea. And they, so anyway, they've gone through all this process and they end up getting closer to Mount Sinai and they happen to run into his father-in-law, Jethro, and his wife, Zipporah, and their two children. And they were so happy to see each other. Oh, wow, we haven't seen you. Oh, I'm glad you're safe, honey. You know, come closer. And they talked and had a good time. And, you know, Moses told Jethro about all the things that had happened. And then, you know, they were around in camp, and Moses had to do some work. And his work was to judge between the children of Israel. So there was a long line that went all the way around the, you know, the mountain. And Moses is sitting there, and all the people would come, and all day long, you know. You got Bill over here, who's got a lamb, and Bob over here didn't take care of the lamb. He put my lamb in the ravine over there, and it's, no, I didn't. Yes, he did. Well, Moses had to judge, and that was like all day. Okay. So in the meantime, his father-in-law, Jethro, is standing there, my son-in-law has a problem. He is micromanaging and he's not doing what's right. So he asked Moses, he said, look, Moses, you're going to wear yourself out and you're going to wear the people out. So why don't you pick some men who are able to judge, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, fifties, and tens. So he did. He picked some men that were good guys, you know, really good men, put them over, you know, to work out these problems. And he did that, and boy, everybody was, you know, relieved because they could get their problem solved. And Moses was relieved because he didn't have to sit there all day. So, yes, Moses learned to delegate at that time. Jethro's advice was to learn to delegate and have wise people do the same thing you're doing, and then, you know, if there's a really hard problem, you can take care of it. But that wasn't the only thing that was good about that. So a system of judging started at this period of time in Israel, where the people could order themselves and learn to judge among themselves. And this is what God wanted. Because when we get to the time of Saul, Samuel told God, you know, these people, you know, they're rejecting me. Well, no, they were rejecting me, Saul. God wanted that judgment to be with the people, to judge among themselves and obey God's laws, you know, that way, with these judges that had been installed way back 3,500 years ago with Moses and the advice of Jethro. So that was a pretty big deal. Of course, that stopped when King Saul was coronated. So anyway, Jethro went home and everybody was back together and they were standing there at the foot of the Mount Sinai. So from the last day of unleavened bread until the day of Pentecost, God had taken a group of slaves out of bondage and brought them across the desert to this place. He'd quenched their thirst, he'd filled their bellies, he fought their battles and gave them a wonderful counsel and a way to govern themselves using God's law. And now they came to Mount Sinai. The day of Pentecost is near and the law will be given. We are on this journey too, by the way. Ours is a spiritual journey, leading to a promised land we call the kingdom of God, where the Spirit has been given. No more thirst and no more hunger, except a hunger for God. From the days of the Exodus until now, we're being led to 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 4. This is the last scripture. 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 4. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ.